Carol Ward, LCSW, is a licensed psychotherapist, communication consultant, and nationally recognized speaker. Carol bases her communication and personal development work on the importance of the body-mind connection. Carol holds an MA in social work from Fordham University, a BA in psychology and communication, and is certified as a level 11 EMDR practitioner. Carol is a member of the National Association of Social Workers and New York State Society for Clinical Social Work and New York Women in Communication. She's conducted presentations and workshops for numerous conferences and organizations. Carol, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here, Lisa. Yes. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yes, so am I, and I tend to be a worrier, so your book has been so helpful. Now, Carol, I really love the book. It's so great. And, you know, you write in the introduction of Worried Sick, quote, "What I did not know on the subject of worry was presented to me in the guise of my mother's deteriorating health." First of all, I want to say I was so sorry to read that. And second of all, how is your mother doing and what did you learn from that experience? And I'm sure it's ongoing. So what are you learning?
It's totally ongoing. As I mentioned in the book, my mother had a diagnosis about a year and a half ago of Alzheimer's disease and vascular dementia. And so as I was, you know, writing this book, it seemed that what I needed to learn about worry showed up in the form of my mother's, you know, deteriorating health, as I said. And it really was facing many of the things that people go through when they worry about another person, and also having to go through my little tool bag that I use in my psychotherapy practice when people come in and talk about worry and really examine those tools and say, wow, you know, I've been recommending this. Now I need to use this. And not that, you know, I'm a big fan of the body-mind connection, not that I hadn't been exercising or trying to have a meditation practice, but there were very specific things that I needed to hone in on and do for myself. So as a daughter, I had to learn how to take care of myself. As a therapist, I was looking at to see if my tools worked. As just a regular human being, I needed to understand what it was like to go through the process of ongoing worry. And by the way, my mother's stable. She still, of course, is suffering from both Alzheimer's disease and vascular dementia, but she is in a stable place.
Now, let's talk about some of these tools. If you can mention a few, and then tell us which ones have been working best for you during this difficult time.
Oh, great. I really broke them into the body, mind, and spirit categories. So when I talk about using the mind, you know, because what happens when we worry, and I'm sure you've experienced this, we start to get into a loop.
Yes.
And we really can't break free. We circle around, we circle around, we circle around. So I really wanted to help people tap into their great brains and their logic in order to help dismantle or at least reduce some of the effects of worry. Because, Lisa, my book is not to tell people that they can't worry, because that's impossible. It's just impossible, and that's, you don't need that extra worry to figure out how to not worry. It really is about managing it and using worry as a signal to you that there's something that you need to pay attention to, whether it's showing up mentally, physically, or spiritually in your life. So when I talk about using the mind, it's really about addressing worry and taking whatever you're worried about and breaking it down to keep saying, you know, one of the exercises I use for myself and for others is called the incomplete picture. So you have something you're worried about, and then you really say to yourself or to another person, okay, you're worried about that. What do you imagine will happen? And then what will happen? And then what will happen? Because often people start to worry and they just get stuck, like, and things will fall apart. And then they get stuck there and they worry and they worry. But you actually push them beyond, okay, how will things fall apart? What will that look like? And then what will happen? And then what will happen? And so many times in my therapy practice, people will say, well, in reality, I know that that won't happen, that I will be, you know, wandering the streets in a daze or, you know, living in my car. And I said, but if that did happen, what would you do next? And people find and tap into their inner resilience when they take things to their wildest imaginings. So you challenge their imagination, and then you say, okay, that's your worst-case scenario. Now what would you do about that worst-case scenario? And you start to create a logical form of steps, and people usually have the answers within. So tapping into the brain is a great idea in the mind part.
That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I need to do that.
Yeah, because we really do get stuck, like, you know, those vague statements of, and then life will be impossible to live.
Yes.
But we never really examine. It comes like we never turn over the stone and say, well, what does that mean? Because people, when they confront their fears, often realize it's exaggerated. Or, as I said, that they actually have tools that they can use. And another mind exercise I use is remembering how you addressed problems in the past. Because this isn't the first time you worried. You've had to overcome probably many, many worries and problems in your life. And you want to remember how you approached that. Oh, yeah, I asked so-and-so for help. Or, oh, yeah, I figured out a game plan. Or, oh, yeah, my humor got me through. So what you're doing is you're reminding your mind that it knows what to do if given the chance. And not that it won't be stressful, but it actually knows what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So often I do that. I remind myself that I've gotten through things in the past. Then the body area is really interesting, and of course the one that everyone hears and I really believe in is some form of movement. But not movement that is compulsive or you're forcing yourself to do because you think it will make you feel better. But I have people really sit down and say, how does my body really want to move? Am I in the mood to do yoga when I'm upset, or do I really want to power walk? Am I in the mood to do kickboxing, or is Tai Chi the thing that's going to help me? You want to do what's right for you, not what other people are telling you would be good for you. And if you can't come up with something, I really think that either turning on the music in your home and dancing around, or literally walking with your dog, with your baby in a stroller, getting on a bike, it doesn't have to be something complicated. But walking is a great thing because it allows your mind to look out at the world and literally get caught up in things. And you get your heart rate going and you get your body physically moving. So some form of movement for the body is really, really terrific.
Yeah, you know, you write something, well, you write so many things in the book that were interesting. I could sit here and quote the whole book. But one thing I really liked, you wrote, quote, many people learn to disconnect from their bodies in order to handle painful emotions. And that's interesting because you need to get back connected. So how, if somebody feels disconnected, what are ways to get back?
Some of the ways to get back are to notice, to do what I call a body scan and mm-hmm. say, okay, where am I holding tension? When I talk about disconnection from the body, when we get frightened, when we get overwhelmed, we do things like we hold our breath. You know, it's almost like we hear bad news and we gasp, you know, with that little suck in. Then we forget to exhale and we walk around, you know, in that state of holding our breath. So I recommend and demonstrate in the book some breathing exercises, literally taking a deep breath in through the nose. If you're listening to this and you're driving your car, you know, to just really inhale deeply and exhale through the mouth. And you can do that by counting to four on the way in as you inhale through your nose and then slowly exhaling on four. And it may feel artificial at first because you're not used to it because you may have been holding your breath, but it allows your breathing and your body to reconnect. Other things are, you know, rolling your shoulders backward and forward when you're sitting at your desk or you're at home. Another thing that you can do is to lie in your back with your knees in your chest. And many people do this in exercise class, as long as it's safe for you, to let your knees roll to the side while you keep your head and body looking forward at the ceiling. And then bring your knees back up to the center and then roll to the other side. This loosens the spine. So what you're doing is you're breaking the habit of holding tension in your body.
Mm-hmm.
You stretch out.
Yeah, that's really important. Now, are you familiar with bioenergetic therapy?
I am.
I did that for years, and it is fantastic because
that
you
is
really
my background.
Get,
yeah,
is it?
Yes, I'm a Reichian therapist, which is where bioenergetics came from the work of Wilhelm Reich. Yes.
Oh, yes, bioenergetic therapy. You really get into your body,
that's
and there's
right.
stuff that's so deep in there, and when you let it out, wow, you feel so much better.
It's true, and that's why I have people come into my practice. Maybe you've had this experience where they'll say, you know, I was in my yoga class, and I was doing a certain movement, I started to cry.
Yes.
Because the tension that's been held in the neck and what's underneath that tension, whether it's just stress from work or deep grief or anger, comes out as the muscles relaxed. And bioenergetics, core energetics, Reikian therapy, all those types of therapy are based on the belief and the theory that we hold emotions in the body as well as the mind.
Yes, we do. And, you know, you also write about the spirit in the book. Now, how do you define spirit?
I define spirit as anything that allows you to move beyond logic and emotion to help restore your, and I'm using this word specifically, faith or belief that things will be all right. So whether that's prayer, whether that's meditation, whether that's a walking meditation, and there are all sorts of forms of, you know, spiritual practices, things that move you from a state of feeling lost and you can't find your way to a state where you feel that not only will things be all right, but you'll be all right as well. So Yeah, it's that. So I recommend things, you know, whatever it is, whether it's meditation, whether it's prayer, whether it's sitting silently in silent reflection. I mean, I think spiritual practices are very personal. Some people get that by staring out at a beautiful vista. Some people get it by, you know, listening to different types of music that allows them to soothe their soul, so to speak. So anything that literally lifts the spirits and allows the mood to shift into a place of balance.
Now, another thing in the book, whether you're talking about the body, mind, or spirit, is you talk about the three C's, and if you can tell us what those are.
Yes. The three C's, which go with every chapter, are about getting into a state of calmness, getting clarity, and tapping into your community. Because when we are feeling agitated in our minds, it's hard to come up with the answers. And a great way to get into a state of calmness is by doing some form of physical activity. Something that, again, it's exactly what you and I were talking about, Lisa, which releases tension from the body.
Yeah.
Because we literally, you can see when people are worried. You can see it on their face. They're biting their lips. They're wringing their hands. They're just tense. So if you can get into a state of calmness through movement, and there's lots of suggestions for that, that's going to help. Then getting the clarity. Usually when you move or release tension, you can get clarity in your mind. And if you can't, there are lots of exercises to help you. Once your mind starts to get clear, and you can do that by thinking about your best time of day when you can problem solve and who can help you with your problems, whether it's a friend or a spiritual leader or a book or an online community, any tools or resources that can help you get mental clarity helps you then handle your worry. And finally, tapping into your community. And when I mean community, it can be a community such as this one where people listen to your show and they get information. It could be literally your neighborhood or community. It could be, as I said, an online community. It could be a group that you belong to, such as other mothers or the PTA or father's group. Whatever it is, you want to tap into the people around you who can offer you support, because that's what you need when you're struggling with worry.
Yes, it's so important. And I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, Carol. I know that this is going to benefit so many people because so many of us worry a lot.
Oh, thank you.
And even if you worry a lot or just worry a little, the book is great because I love books where it really walks you through and gives you wonderful suggestions, page after page. So I want to thank you again. The book is Worried Sick, Break Free from Chronic Worry to Achieve Mental and Physical Health. And Carol, how can people learn more about you and your wonderful work?
Oh, they can go to my website, which is www.carolward.com, carolward.com. Or you can also find the book on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com or any bookstore. Just go in and ask for Worried Sick by Carol Ward.
Oh, that's terrific. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. I hope everyone has a great week. Keep being healthy. Take care. Bye-bye.